Hi, Gibby.
Hi, you are listening to Gibby's Guide, the podcast.
Broadcasting distress signal. Salvation in 6 minutes. Stand by.
This is an interview with the solo developer of Crashland, often called the toughest game in VR. It was recorded on Crashland's original release on the Oculus Quest 2 in 2021, with the evil genius that is Clear Ap Kenneth, a computer science lecturer from Bangor University in Wales. I've dusted down the audio to celebrate the release of Crashland 2.0, a big expansion released in December 2025.
So my name is Clear Ap Kenneth. I work as an academic. I'm a lecturer in the School of Computer Science at Bangor University in North Wales in the UK. I do a lot of research in graphics and VR and procedural animation and things like that. And I also moonlight as a VR developer, so I've been doing a lot of development since the beginning of VR, really. I've released two titles up until now. The first one was Ocean Rift, which is an underwater safari park, basically. And the second one was released this year, and that's called Crashland, and that's an action game where you fight against hordes of aliens on an alien planet.
Just tell me a little bit about your academic life.
So I've always been fascinated by computer graphics, especially real-time computer graphics. So that's from playing video games my whole life, basically. I was lucky enough that my university, Bangor University, we have a lot of expertise in graphics. I think it's the 50th year of graphics research in Bangor. So I found a good place there, a good kind of set of mentors and professors and so on. And I got to do a PhD in procedural animation. So that's using AI and algorithms to make more interesting animation, more interesting virtual creatures. And I was really lucky as well that VR, so the DK1, the original Rift, Oculus Rift development kit, came along just as I was getting some academic freedom. So I was allowed to do my own research. And obviously it was the Wild West when that device appeared, and people like me who had a background in graphics and video game development and stuff and animation, it was just the perfect timing for me to obsess over something, and that's what I did, really.
Can you, in layman terms, just explain a little bit more about procedural animation?
So procedural animation is basically, instead of having an animation play on a loop or using a data source, in other words, some motion capture or some animation somebody has made, instead of blending that together, you make the animation or you augment the animation. It can be a mixture of the two, using AI or algorithms. It might be as simple as just placement of feet on the ground or a hand to a door handle or something. At its most extreme, you are animating the creature as though it's a virtual robot, essentially. You're doing everything from breathing to blinking to the way it moves its limbs and things. It's useful in VR, I think, because you're immersed and you are in the same kind of volume and space. You're present with the other creature, the virtual creature. I think that level of animation detail adds a lot. And in Crashland, obviously, it's used when you kill something or when something's wounded, it will behave differently every time. So the action element becomes a bit more interesting because they never quite behave the same twice. Sometimes, for example, with giant worms in Crashland, you have no choice but to animate it using procedural animation because you cannot motion capture such a thing. You have to basically make an animation system to do it. But often, It is in the small micro details that we find procedural animation. So blinking, making a character look at you. If a character isn't breathing in VR, that can be quite kind of creepy because it's something your subconscious misses, I guess.
Turbo fire.
I've always had a streak for the kind of, you know, sinister and kind of sadistic, you know, in terms of you have a captive audience in VR, and you know, I guess there's some trust that's put in you. The creatures in Crashland, you know, you can go down the route of having a creature that's quite high in health, and the player is also high in health. So when you're fighting against them, it's like a war of attrition, really. And you can stand there and take a lot of hits, or you can make a creature that basically can kill you in one hit or two hits. And yeah, I went down that route, and that tends to lead towards a game that's quite intense and where you can kind of scare someone quite easily. When I was making Crashland, one of the early creatures I made was a spider that ran across the ground. But there was something missing, and what was missing was that silhouette of a spider where you can see the eight legs. So that later on in development, I thought, I want to play on that fear as well. So that idea of like that image of, you know, the eight legs. So I made another spider that could fly or that could jump at you. So it was a silhouette against the sky coming down. So yeah, I've tried all the tricks in the book, the subconscious stuff that affects a lot of people, you know, to try and get as much different types of horror in the game.
I was going to ask you, were you afraid of spiders when you were a kid?
Yeah, absolutely. I wasn't to begin with, and then I think there was a school project where we had to take, you know, a spider in or some insect in, and overnight it just made a horrible web in the jam jar, you know, and it became a sinister thing at that point. I think that's where it started. And that, yeah, I did, when I was doing my PhD, I was looking at spider animation systems. And one of the things that really helped was that kind of tingling, kind of subconscious sense of, you know, arachnophobia. So I knew when I was getting somewhere with the animation systems and the AI, when it started to kind of really creep me out. So yeah, it's always been there. And obviously when you're making an action slash horror game, spider-like things are a shortcut to horror and stuff as well. So Crashland took like 7 or 8 years to develop. So I guess the inspiration is all over the place. Sometimes it's just science fiction classics like the, you know, Facehugger or like the Velociraptor from Jurassic, you know, the movie monsters, or even Ray Harryhausen, that kind of, you know, back to the scorpions and stuff from that, the 70s, like Sinbad films and things, Clash of the Titans and all that. Sometimes it comes just from Earth's prehistory. It can be some kind of, you know, I'd often look through books and you know, my kids' books or something, or just search the internet for some weird creature that used to live in the seas, you know, at the Precambrian Earth or something. I mean, I remember one of the last aliens I did, I just mentioned the Banshees, which are these flying kind of spiders that scream at you as they come down. Yeah. The inspiration for that one came from Dunkirk, the Christopher Nolan film, and the Stuttgart dive bombers that the Nazis used to have that made this kind of noise as they kind of, you know, it's basically psychological warfare. It's just a siren that they has a propeller attached. And that was what kicked off, you know, the sound of that creature and the fact that, you know, it would scream as it's coming down towards you. So the inspiration can just be completely random. One of the weapons is a chopping blade. That came from the first King Kong, King Kong Skull Island, where a helicopter rotor blade smacks against King Kong's arm. It's just that is enough to trigger 3 months of work, basically, and, you know, one of my favorite weapons in the game eventually. So yeah, it's all over the place. I guess a lot of games are made, you know, design documents, and you have an arts department, and you have people whose role it is to come up with creatures. I don't have that luxury. I'm one person working in my spare time, so it's a bit more haphazard and organic how these things come about.
Do you think, as a solo developer, where you've got the disadvantage of not bouncing off other people, you've got the disadvantage of doing everything yourself, but you've got the advantage of doing the whole thing holistic?
Yeah, so you can be, you know, you can even do things like create an alien and spend 3 months on it and then eventually just scrap it completely, or scrap a full mechanic. Even if you're working with two people, that can become difficult because you're scrapping someone else's work at the same time, you know, and sometimes it just means your imagination doesn't even open the door to consider that kind of thing. Whereas if you're working alone, yeah, the freedom, it does, obviously it's a pain in the ass to work, have to do everything yourself and stuff, and there are disadvantages. You can't be good at everything, but there are strengths, and that's certainly one of them, just the freedom to be able to have a vision and try to kind of, you know, go where it goes.
That kind of 8-year development is pretty rare in VR, right?
It is in VR, yeah. I mean, there's you know, a few people that were kicking around at the beginning doing tech demos and messing about. They're still, you know, there's solo developers still on the store that are still releasing stuff. I know Cosmo Dread came out recently, and that is a similar person that started out around the same time. So there are still, you know, elements of that. The people that did a lot of the good title, you know, title like Pistol Whip, they've been around since the beginning. Cloudhead Games, I think they've been innovating since day dot as well. So there are, there's people still around similar. Creature sounds, you start off obviously by mixing together lions and crocodiles and tigers and bears and things and speeding them up, slowing them down. Eventually I ran out of creatures, or they didn't quite fit, you know, or you know, obviously you have insects and stuff as well you can mix in. Towards the end of the game, I was basically making my own noises and speeding them up, slowing them down, getting my wife to do the same, you know. So sometimes just brushing my teeth and then just gargling, and then that becomes the death cry of some slug or something. So yeah, the sound design comes from all over the place. The idea is always, of course, when you're playing Crashland, after you've played it for a while, you can close your eyes and you know what's on the battlefield. Right. There's only like four or five things at any one time, and the idea is it needs to be quite distinct. Another advice from Oculus was some of the creatures sounded quite similar. So you know, you try to diversify it as much as possible. And that creatures, it's called barking in games development. So basically that the creature makes a noise every now and again to let you know that it's about.
Right.
Some of it is, as I said, you know, screaming spiders and stuff. Those are very obvious things that are coming towards you. So you try to, if something is flying towards you at high speed, you want to let the player know. Otherwise it gets really frustrating. So even stuff like before a creature will spit, they will make a certain sound before they spit a rock at you or a ball of web or something.
Yeah.
So the sound design, it's really important, especially in a game where the screen can go black so quickly. You need to be very, sound is very, very important. I mean, it also extends beyond the creatures to just the weapon sounds and stuff.
Yeah.
Making the game feel good to play. When you pull the trigger, obviously if it's a shooter, it's a game about shooting things. When you pull the trigger on a gun, there's a little bit of a delay, an artificial delay you put it in before you have the sound of the bullet hitting something, so the kind of sound.
Right.
The delay between the gun firing and that sound, the sound, has to be, it can't be on top of each other because then it gets lost in the gunshot.
Yeah.
It can't be too delayed, otherwise it just feels wrong. Just little things like that, and obviously that applies to many, many different directions in the sound design. But is the difference between a game that feels nice to play or is not frustrating to play at least and something that is a bit muddy and, you know, confusing.
Yeah.
So, I spent a lot of time, years even, you know, refining that stuff.
It shows. It's amazing. Which one was the teeth-gargling creature?
There's a creature quite early on. The three-eyed slugs, the shock slugs kind of zap you, your teleporter.
Yeah.
If you kill them, there is a chance they go make a horrible kind of, you know, extended gargling as they kind of, you know, flop into the air and into the ground. You won't be able to unhear it.
Prehistoric dodo-style birds, that sound?
Those are partly inspired by Jurassic Park. There's a little bit of, so the velociraptors in Jurassic Park, I didn't lift it from the film or anything.
Right, but
it's the same source. It's actually, I think it's a Galapagos turtle. When they mate, they make these certain noises. It's like, I'm not going to replicate the noise, but it's a classic Jurassic Park kind of velociraptor kind of call. So there's a mixture of that. And I think vultures, spider pans slow down and then mixed on top of each other. So I think generally I didn't go too far away from birds or you know, bird-like things like velociraptors for the sound for them. They were one of the earlier creatures, so I had a lot to work with then.
Right. Come on. squealing pigs?
You can get a lot of mileage out of a boar, of a pig screaming and squealing. I think even, yeah, the flying spiders, the banshees, that's a screaming pig, basically slow, it's a sperra.
Right.
Slow down. Sometimes, yeah, it's just one death animation sound effect will be a screaming pig. The other one might be, you know, some other animal screaming, a squealing elephants, for example.
Right.
Yeah, that used quite liberally throughout, yeah. I followed what is known, so the original creators of Halo, I think one of the designers there came up with the concept of 30 seconds of fun. The idea, every 30 seconds in Halo, something new happens. So 30 seconds of combat against grunts, maybe with a certain weapon, maybe story for 30 seconds, then 30 seconds of combat with elites with a new weapon, perhaps,
right.
Maybe some vehicle section, and then a sniper section where you're being sniped, and then 30 seconds later, you get hold of the sniper rifle and turn the tables. So the idea basically that the game can be, it's constantly changing. I tried to follow something similar with Crashland, where even down to a spreadsheet, you know, every mission has one or two new aliens in it. A new weapon periodically drops every few missions. But even within a mission, every 30 seconds to a minute, something new happens. So even if you are stuck, if you just push that extra little bit, something completely new will appear. New weapon that's completely different, or a new alien that's just horrifying in its own new way. You know, whether you're into horror or action or whatever you're into, there is something new just over the horizon. So that's how I've dealt with the difficulty being how it is, you know. It also, even if you do die, you can get back into the game within 10 seconds, I think. So it's try to optimize how fast you can get back into the game. So, yeah, I'm happy with it being a really tough game because it's been designed to kind of, you know, be something that can accommodate that. And if you do grind, as you say, you unlock perks as well. So you can kind of not necessarily over level because you don't get tougher, really. A little bit extra damage and stuff. But you have more tools in your arsenal. And eventually, you've only got to get rescued once before you get to the next mission.
Yeah. It took me a while to get into it, but it's now my most played game. But I absolutely hate you for level 11, which took me at least 50 goes till I made it.
The very sadistic design decisions made on purpose, I think. There's a few of them in the second half. Cursed myself. I had to playtest the game before the new easier difficulty was in there, so I cursed myself a lot. you rely on certain tools in the game, and then suddenly those tools are taken away from you as well.
Has anyone completed the whole thing on hard mode? Obviously they have, but are they few and far between?
They're quite few and far between. I think, like all games, you know, not everybody gets to the end. A lot of people do complete it, actually. Going back to the beginning in a harder difficulty, I think that's probably a minority. People that want more Crashland, it's there. And as you get into hard difficulties, and another difficulty mode will unlock eventually as well, it becomes a wholly different game because techniques that used to work don't work anymore, and weapons that were useless now become very useful, and, you know, perks that were glossed over now become essential and things like that.
Right.
If I've been on YouTube and I've seen people complete it in the hardest difficulty, and they're using techniques I hadn't even thought of. So definitely it does happen. It's a minority, certainly, but yeah, it's there's some longevity there if you want it.
Top three favorite creatures.
Top three favorite
That you've created.
I like the Hellworm.
Yes.
So the Hellworm, which you see in Mission 3, you don't see that in other games. I think that's a unique creature. So, you know, an above-ground creature that's multi-stories. Massive amount of work went into the procedural animation system for that. It's not the most complex creature to fight against, but it's intimidating, and it kind of comes out of nowhere in Mission 3, and, you know, it's usually something you see as a boss. Really happy with that one, just because I managed to get it to animate.
Right.
Another one is the Banshees, one of the last creatures I put in, just a screaming flying spider.
Yeah.
The psychological horror of it, basically, you know, squealing pig noises as it's coming down. It's based on the chrysalids from XCOM as well, in that if they get anywhere near you, you're dead very quickly.
Right.
And they're at their most vulnerable when they're in the air, so you've got that weak point that's very visible. So it's a good kind of gameplay slash horror mechanic going on there. And then I guess it's difficult to get. I like the long legs, so these kind of multi-story spiders.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be the one that makes people scream for the first time when they appear. because they're not telegraphed. You know, they're very early in the game, but then you don't get a warning. And the fact that they basically fire it, you know, their tongue into you and suck the life out of you and stuff. It's just a very horrifying imagery. Spiders plus that going on, you know. So it's
okay.
That's probably my top three. But there's, you know, I love them all. They're my little children, you know, all 50 of them. But, you know, they obviously have favourites.
I can imagine. Okay, I'll do another top three. Top three weapons?
The first weapon I made in the first tech demo was the rocket launcher. I really like that one because you can detonate the rockets in the air. So that comes quite late in the game. Yeah, that's a really nice, again, one of those cathartic turn-the-table ones.
Right.
And I also like the burst fire, which you get in Mission 2 when it's powered up. That's based on the pistol that Robocop has. It's just a three round burst, just a powerful kind of, you know, short range thing that just chews through things. I like that one as well. There is a power up you can get, that eventually unlocks that. Either turns your boomstick or your pistol into just a death machine. That applies to all weapons. Yeah, just turbocharges whatever you've got on you. Absolutely. That's something that I added quite late on, but it's random.
It's fun just to have some techno music appearing from nowhere.
And then you're gone for a few seconds, and then suddenly you're so super lonely when it runs out. Yeah.
What are your favourite perks?
I think turret is one of my favourite early ones. There's a mission. There's certain missions that take place in the dark and things, or missions that you know, at like 4 minutes in, something horrible is going to start appearing. Once I hear the sound effect of a spider, like a pale spider or something, I will drop that turret still now, you know, because it's kind of a friend you have for 30 seconds that will just ease the pain and the stress.
It's great.
There's another one. Yeah, so turret's nice. It loses its power in higher difficulties, but it's a good kind of friend to have in need. Another one, Reaper, so these exploding kind of plants in every mission that you can use to basically detonate. Basically they're exploding barrels from Doom applied to kind of a plant.
Right.
Reaper, basically when you shoot them, it recharges your boomstick, so basically you get a free powerful shot instantly, and also gives you one teleport point back, and that can be huge just to get out of trouble at the very, you know, like a get out of jail free card if you're really struggling and you're just about to be eaten, or you know, you're in trouble. So that would be another one, and the final one probably teleport punch, which basically is a risk reward thing where you can just slam into things and speed zip around the battlefield. That's really useful, especially in missions where you've got lots of small things. So you can replenish your teleporter quite quickly. It's absolutely useless when you're fighting big things because, you know, you run out of teleports before you can get any more. But when you can replenish the teleporter, that's a really powerful weapon to kind of, as long as you know what you're doing, you have to be a bit careful, but yeah.
Leech fire. Salvation in 60 seconds.
I'm just trying to entertain people, I think, in VR. You know, I try to make things that are new in some way, try to push some genre forward or just give somebody an experience that they can't get anywhere else. Mm. The powerful thing about VR is, you know, I'm pretty sure, you know, if you write a film or, you know, if you're a director or you're an author writing books and stuff, you hope that you've got the person's attention. But they might easily be daydreaming or on their phone or something while they're consuming your whatever you've done. In VR, you got people's full attention. You know, you've taken control of everything they've got. I think that's so powerful, and I'm just trying to kind of give people an experience they might not have otherwise, whether that be swimming with dolphins or, you know, fighting for your life against giant spiders.
My thanks to Clear. The update brings a full second campaign alongside the original, with 12 special missions that unlock as you level up. It contains 40 new creatures, 12 unique perks, 11 new weapons, and, for the first time, underwater missions. You can pick up Crashland for $20, or, if you use the promo code Gibby, that's G-I-B-B-Y, at checkout, you can get 20% off until January the 1st, 2026, or 10% off after that date. The discount applies to any game on the store. If you haven't already, you can pick up the latest issue of Gibby's Guide at gibbysguide.org, and you can buy the annual printed book, The Ultimate Quest Guide, on Amazon worldwide. Just search for Gibby's Guide 2026. And I'll leave the last word to my good friend Guilherme.
Virtual reality is a fucking amazing experience.